So if y'all would welcome Sandra Dodd.
In the booklet, the published booklet that was in your bags, if you have that, you have a picture, because I said I need to do something that I would do if I had a chalkboard, and it's this kind of looking graph. And I'll get to that in a minute. I want to talk about how learning works, and it's a scientifically non-scientific explanation. Learning is when you connect something new to something you already knew. That's all. There are fancy words for it. There are studies to prove it. But you have to have something already in you to connect the new information to. Basically, in plain old English words, that's the deal. And if that's all it is, then it doesn't matter what you're learning. You're still adding to that web of information you have and to those connections. And if you think the neural pathway model, which people have talked about for a long time, that it makes some kind of physical connection between where you're storing one kind of information, where you're storing another, there are other models of how brains work because people don't know all that much about it still. But if that's true, then every trail you have is going to be a shortcut for some other kind of memory or connection. And then everything that you do with your, not just with your kids, because I know that the surface topic of the whole weekend is how we set our kids up to learn more, but all the adults are here to learn more. And so how are you going to connect what you hear us talk about or what you see or what you read to what you already know? It's worth thinking about it just in terms of any human, how any human learns. When you think of something and you go, well, that reminds me. It really means that puts my brain to work again. Old connections have just sparked up again. And so if you're reminded of something, that's good. That is another connection made. And that might not seem like learning to you, but the more things that remind you of other things, the more you know. I read that the SAT tests, the dreaded SAT tests that a lot of colleges require, have taken out the analogies section. That was my favorite because it made a lot of sense to me. You know, and the classic example is puppy is to dog as kitten is to what? And it's fun to, wrong answers are fun. You know, there's not, yes, of course there's only one right answer because they set it up to be that way. But it was, those were always fun to mess with. And now I guess they've decided that either it's too hard to understand or it's too hard to score or it's not legitimate. But I always thought that was the coolest stuff. And one day Holly came and said, a Zen garden is like an Etch-a-Sketch, huh? Yeah. I never thought of it, but I never will forget it now. And there was a cartoon somewhere, I don't remember where it was, but somebody had a laptop computer and had picked it up and was shaking it like an Etch-a-Sketch to delete something. And so is that something that's ever going to be on anybody's even SAT test? You know, a Zen garden is to an Etch-a-Sketch as? No. But it doesn't matter, because if that kind of thinking was ever good for anything, it's still good for something. Somebody was making some Simpsons joke last night, probably Brock, made some quote from, I don't remember who, standing up in the talent show. And it doesn't matter what you're connecting. It's pretty flashy and impresses grandparents if you're connecting Ben Franklin's life with, you know, something in current events. But it's just as cool if you're going, oh, South Park is like The Simpsons in the following ways. Yet different in the following ways. And although it scares people, adults, it kind of triggers their school phobia sometimes to talk about comparison contrast, because they go, write a comparison contrast paper. And you're going, ew, big words, ew, I don't want to. But that's what kids do all the time. When they're talking about video games, when they're talking about television shows, when they're talking about, you know, which of their friends they like to do this with and why. All of that kind of analysis of what's the good part, what's the bad part, what is familiar, what's new. That's not only learning straight out, but it's learning about learning. It's trying to figure out how those processes work, and you should encourage that. You know, if they want to, Holly, I have to encourage myself to not discourage Holly from telling me her stories, because they don't stop, and they tend to start when she gets really tired at night. She gets this really hyper phase, and that's when she wants to tell me the stories of the day, and her stories always involve the history of the story. And the history of each person involved in the story, and then the interactions of the people involved in the story and how that affects it, and her recent interactions with each person involved in the story. and what she heard about. And I said, ooh, that's hard. That's a lot for me late at night to understand. But it's really cool to see how analytical she is and how complex her view of any little interpersonal deal is. Because it involves who has, you know, who kind of likes him, who used to like him, who's seen him lately, when they went to dinner, why they didn't invite one girl and did invite another. And these are like three people removed. It's like a friend of Marty's friend's friend. And she has it down. I could discourage that. I could say, this is none of your business. It's not important. But what it is, it's important to her, and it's fascinating to me to see how her mind works. And that's valuable sometimes. Pam and I had this discussion years ago about kids at parks, park days. And in Albuquerque, we had two kids. Kirby was one, and another girl, Sarah Cordova. They were so good at that sort of interpersonal awareness, that if the kids weren't getting along, if one kid was unhappy, or if kids were fighting, or somebody was being left out, instead of the adults trying to go make it worse, we would just say, Sarah, is that little girl okay? And she'd, you know, scan, think, analyze, and she'd go, I'll go talk to her. And they would just somehow magically make it better. You know, they knew how to move just a little closer to the kid who's shy or whatever. And it was great, because we grew up in that school model. It's like, only play with the kids in your class, stay on the swings. When the bell rings, you know, stop. It was all this regimented sort of pretend play, you know, organized play. And you're doing kickball today, that's it. No swings, no slides for you, kickball day. But when all these kids have a whole park and all the kids to play with, their learning is different. They're doing a kind of interpersonal social learning that we didn't have the opportunity to do. It was really discouraged. So all it takes is for you to scan through your connections. What does this remind you of? Have you been in a situation like this before? Who does this person remind you of? Do you know something about kids like this? And part of what makes it hard to talk about with when I'm trying to talk about this with people is I don't know good vocabulary. I don't know good simple English vocabulary, especially for some of this. But I've talked about models of the universe, that every person's building a model of the universe inside. And school sort of tries to give you a Tinker Toy set of model of the universe, and they say, if you learn all these parts, memorize the names of all these parts, then you'll have a good model of the universe, but it doesn't work. And not only that, if you move to another state, all your parts don't work anymore, you need to know new things, and you know, heaven forbid you move to another country, because all that American history you learned is no good anymore, or you know, you come from Canada here. And so that's not really a good way to think of models of the universe. The one you build on your own, the one you build on your own is yours, and that makes sense to you because you built it yourself. And that's, everybody had an overlay of that too, but I know when I was a kid, the things that I didn't need to know, that I shouldn't know, that were not my business, that I was too young to know or too old to care about, that was the shameful part of the universe. So my model of the universe had the parts I should be proud of and the parts I should hush up about and maybe hide. My kids don't have that. They have a big flourishing jungle universe and everything's legitimate. But you can't, even if I were to make like this little diagram, if you just came in and if you have the booklet that came, I wanted to talk about this diagram and they're in there. But even if we could make a chart as big as that wall, we couldn't begin, even if we just stuck with one subject, we couldn't begin to show the kind of connections that people have inside them. And if it's some topic you had never, ever heard of, your connections wouldn't even be this much because you had to have it something to hook to. You wouldn't have six things. But if we started all the connections that everybody at the whole conference had about some idea, some topic, some thing, item, place, we couldn't make a flat representation of it at all. And even if we could somehow make a 3D one, kind of like those Lucite chessboards, 3D chess game, that would be too simple still. Because even if we could do a whole wall of all our connections and then go, okay, what's on the other side of the wall is future ideas and what's on this side of the wall is past ideas. That'd be a pretty fancy model, and that could be big. We could work on it for a month. But that wouldn't be big enough because it would have to be, what do we have in our minds besides past and future and the flat connections? Because we have what if this had happened, the what if connections. And one of the ways that I think about things like coming to a conference like this is I run my scenarios. People do computer programs to do that. You know, who's going to move to this town where and what do we need? You know, and they put in all the factors and it goes. It's kind of like SimCity for the real world, only not as fun. And And so if I when I'm thinking about what could go wrong, I kind of run these scenarios. Well, if the car breaks down, or if we get sick, or if. And they run out to their little ends. I can run them. That's kind of how my mind works. So in your own connections about any topic you're interested in, about any historical topic, about all the places you've ever lived before, you have those two maybe in some degree. What if I had married that one guy? What if we had stayed in the old house? What if we had taken the job and gone to Portland? What, you know? So you have those models of your own universe too, like the, oh, started out there and it kind of died, you know, like didn't really take. But the ideas still stay. You still have a connection with that, the thing that didn't happen. So your model of the universe also has these sort of little tentative dead ends. I kind of thought about doing that. I wish I had moved to New Zealand. Yeah, I think about retiring to England. That's pretty complex, and you can't make a model of it on paper or with writing or with a computer, and yet your brain's been doing it your whole life, and it's going to keep on doing it. This graph, I need to credit this, and I probably can't say her name. Anna Kealoha? Is that her name? Kealoha? She did this model in the math section of her book, Trust the Children. It's a fun little book, but it's kind of like if you're running a preschool, here's a lot of things you could do, or a playgroup. And she puts a number in the middle, and if you don't have this, what I have is 13. And then it's like, what is 13? 26 divided by 2, or 6 plus 5, or, you know, different sort of factor kind of things of what all is 13. But as soon as we saw that at my house, Holly and I were playing with it with other things besides numbers. What is 13? Unlucky, you know. Okay, abandon the mathematical aspect. Let's go. 13 is Baker's Dozen. 13 is Jesus and the Apostles. You know, 13 is, so all the connections that you would have if somebody says 7, you know, what 7 probably has some connections for you from folklore, your life, gambling, dice, whatever. And everybody has that. But we usually shut it down because it's not important, because it's not going to be on a test. Nobody's going to ask you on an SAT test or on a job resume, so what all does Santa Fe remind you of? I'm like, what? But those are some cool conversations, aren't they, when you're just sitting around with somebody and they mention something and you go, oh, yeah, I was there one time and this thing happened. And then that leads to a story about, you know, I saw Zozobra. Oh, yeah? In India, they have these big life-size puppets. Oh, yeah. And in England, they set fire to Guy Fawkes. Oh, yeah. And, you know, so one thing, you know, flaming puppet leads to India, leads to England, leads to revolutionary politics, fireworks. I love those conversations. And I love it when you get off to fireworks and you go, how did we get here? Oh, yeah, Santa Fe. And if you can, when you're trying to figure out how to make unschooling easier, go for those moments instead of discouraging them, instead of saying, wait, no, stay on the topic. We're only telling Santa Fe stories now. No, go for it. Go ahead, because it'll come back around. And if it doesn't come back around in that half hour or that week or that year, that's okay. Because anyway, each person was having different pictures. Each person was connecting it to different memories and different ideas and different potential future plans. That's okay. That's good. It's good exercise. And then it's not really exercise. People say, well, it's good exercise thinking. Yeah, except it was real thinking. And the memories will stay in there. On the example about Holly, if you have the book, I don't know what page it's on. Does anybody have that book out and know what page? Thank you. On the one about Holly at the bottom, that was fun because you could just change the middle then and use any of those other things for the middle and it'll branch out to all other kinds of things. The Blazing Orange is the name that she uses on Halo 2, and it was just one of those randomly assigned names, but she liked it. And then they have a thing called, she's not here. If anybody knows, yell it out. Any of the kids might know. When you're on Xbox Live, they have a little page where you can put your photos. And there's one photo where you have to hold something that has your name, your Halo name or whatever, so that but there's a name, verified portrait or something. Anybody know? There's a kid with a red hat. Do you know that Xbox deal where you have to have the picture that can prove it to you? I don't know. But she had a sign that said blazing and was holding an orange or something like that. And it's really neat to see the other kids. It's kind of like a little art moment. Like, how will you portray your username in a photograph? I never heard of any such a thing. It's cool. And that way, any other photograph that matches that, they know it's really you. And it keeps the kids from putting up just random photos that they found online, which some do too. And so the Blazing Orange connects to a whole lot of websites of photos and friends of theirs. And I started to say I use that word loosely, but it's not loose. There are people that you know in person who don't know each other as well as some people know each other by email. And this isn't even just email. They have voice. You can leave voice. It's kind of like phone messages combined with pictures. And so she'll come in and turn on the Xbox and have messages from all over the place. And when we were driving over here, every time we would stop or we'd pass through somewhere, they would start, Holly and Marty would start naming who lives in that part of that state. And so their geographical model of the universe is expanded because of that. And Holly will run down to my office sometimes and go, where's the map? There's a map on the wall with stars of who's been where. And when we all stuck together, we just had one color star. Now Holly's broken it out. She has her own color because she's been some places the other kids haven't been. And Marty went to New York and they didn't. So Marty needs a star because he spent a week at Ann Oman's house. And she'll run down and say, where's Montana? And she's looking which end is what end because she wants to know. She wants in her picture where her other friends live. That's a better model than you're ever going to get memorizing stuff in school and filling in outlines and drawing the major rivers. Because I'm real interpersonal too. So her model of the universe is where people are and what their accents are. She's way into accents, and you don't get that by email. She loves Arkansas accents and Welsh accents. So she's had this year, the past year, she got to go to England. She's been on Xbox Live, and she's starting to pick people out where they've been by their accents. She got to hang around with a guy who was half Italian and half Irish. And she was thrilled. And by the way, he pronounced stuff. And she's back with him. Every once in a while, still, she'll think of a story. Oh, yeah. And that's personal to her. Those are memories she can share with me, kind of, but I don't get it like she does because I wasn't there. And so I get the secondary. I connect that with Holly. For me, the connection is Holly knows a guy who has an Italian-Irish accent. Thinking's fancy name, if we're going to go, I really like English, and I get on this a lot, and people are like, oh, she's on the history of words again. But there are two ways to speak English. There are millions of ways to speak English, but you can simplify things down to the Anglo-Saxon words, or you can fancy it up and baffle your friends with the obfuscation of using Latinic terms. But I really like the English terms when we can use them, and so I like thinking. And that's a really old word, Chaucer word, Beowulf old. And the fancier word is cognition. I kind of like cognition too because it reminds me of machinery and it sounds like ignition, like spark, spark, now it's going. I don't think they're really related, cognition and ignition, but they're kind of close. But even cognition and incognito, it's like, do you know it or do you not know it? I love the t-shirts that have the camouflage and it says in white letters, now you can't see me. Another old English word that's related to thinking is ken, K-E-N, and it only survives now, at least in the United States, in drinking songs and Scottish ballads, you know. But it's the root word of know and knowledge. And when kids ask, why does know have a K, now you can tell them because it's from the word ken, to know. And it used to be knowledge, really. But they dropped the vowel. Somebody just lately, and Holly and I were talking about this just before we left, because she said, when French has apostrophes, did they leave out vowels like in English? And I said, sometimes they left out whole words. And somebody online, I remember, if it was you, wave at me, somebody said, English goes from consonant to consonant, French goes from vowel to vowel. And that made a lot of sense. So English drops vowels. They keep the k, because we're one of those Germanic languages with a lot of hoiky and hard sounds. And French just sort of uses as little consonant as they need to go from one vowel to the other. So knowledge and, you know, knowledge is from kenning and knowing, and that's from what do you just have. Knowledge is cognition is all in your head, but knowledge is kind of bodily. You can know something physically. And I had an incident last week. The sodas have been for all my life and possibly generations before in six packs with the plastic rings, right? You know, that's how it is. Six fastened with plastic. Keith went to Costco and the world had changed and they were eight fastened with plastic. And do we think in eights? I hardly think in sixes. Holly thinks in sixes. She prefers sixes to fives and tens. She said, it's just easier, Mom. And I'm like, that's your universe. So I went out into the garage quickly with other things in my hand. I'm not a real physical person. I, like, have broken my leg and stuff. But I just went out in the garage and I snagged up buy two rings. If I snag something up by two rings, that should be four Dr. Peppers, period. I've been on this planet a while. And I went like this, and it was heavy, and my arm went, what? And, things happened at that moment. I could have, run it into the thing and broken them, and it was really heavy. And my whole arm went, wrong, 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 wrong. And when I walked in the house holding it, Marty went, what? So you don't think about what your arm knows about the weight of four Dr. Peppers until it's six. And when Marty saw that, and when I saw Marty see it, it was this whole horrible thing, like I had six fingers on both hands, which reminded me of Princess Bride. And it reminded me of that toy in the 60s, six fingers, six fingers, six fingers, like a little water gun that looked like a finger, and you strap it on and you have a handful of water squeezing stuff. And so that's, for me, what six Dr. Peppers with two empty rings out brought to mind. What's it good for? Well, I talked to Keith about how I didn't know my arm knew that much about Dr. Pepper. And that's knowledge. English has a word for all of that, for all of what you just know. Like when you go in your house at night and you can find the light switch and not run into the footstool and all of that sort of dance that people can do in the dark in their own houses. And we just saw a movie the other day. Marty and I watched Proof, an Australian movie. And it's so cool. It's such a neat idea about a blind guy who takes photos. And then he has to ask his friends what's in the photo. But he still considers it proof of what was there. And so the question is, are they telling him exactly what's in the photo? And that's just as cool as The Truman Show, as far as nature of reality. It's a really good movie. But there's a woman in there who takes care of a blind man, and when she's mad at him, she moves furniture. Not a lot. She just, puts the umbrella stand in front of the door and stuff. And it's her way of flipping him off. So at the ends of some scenes, as she leaves, she'll, scoot a chair over and slam the door. So she messes with his knowledge. But that's a neat kind of knowledge, isn't it? Going to your own refrigerator, and you don't have to wake up much to know where the milk is. People don't consider that. I think for that English idea of knowledge, maybe the good Latin word is awareness. That's more of, what do you know whole? You know out of the corner of your eye who's over there, or by the sunlight, what time of day it is, or by the color of your yard, whether it's likely to rain or not. You have an awareness of where you are, your own real yard. Like sometimes you go somewhere else, you can't guess the weather. But in your own neighborhood, it's cloudy, but that's not rain. And people who come to visit you might not know that. And I certainly don't know Midwest weather. It always looks like rain to me. And I like the cognition ignition thing. Oh, when you see something familiar and you recognize it, that's good. Because we just go, yeah, I recognized him. I recognize that you're making sense. But if you look at it, it's like I recognized that. It's like it reminded me. So it caused me to reboot the thinking part of my brain concerning that. Or I didn't recognize him. I was wearing makeup yesterday because Rin put makeup on me, and that was strange. But another friend of mine put makeup on me a few years ago for a party, and I was dressed in... I usually wear Saxon costumes when I do SCA things, and I was wearing late Renaissance, beady, sort of embroidered, dangly, big hat thing. And I wore enough makeup that I didn't look like me, which doesn't take much, any makeup. But this was a severe sort of makeup mask that a friend of mine did. And I was standing really close, if I'd been standing right down there close to you guys, to some people who know me really, really well, but I didn't say anything. And they were looking at me without knowing me. I could tell by their eyes they were being polite. They were looking at me like they would look at people they didn't know. And they were smiling, kind of wanly, like to be encouraging of me to get in the conversation, and I was just, watching. And finally one of them did recognize me, and she squealed. She jumped back and squealed. Because she had not recognized me. Her brain had defined me as something else. When I was teaching junior high, I went to a dance, a little sock hop thing. And I went in costume, and I didn't tell anybody. Not my best friend next door teacher didn't say I was going to do this. And I had a long sort of robe, Middle Eastern robey thing, and I had a full head gorilla mask. And I went to the dance, and it was so... What I thought would happen didn't happen. I was the youngest teacher there. I was 21 that year, 22. And I went next door to my friend who was 63, and I knocked on her door, and when she opened the door, she didn't even guess it was me because no one had ever seen these two things I was wearing, and they covered me up. And she looked at me she really liked me, and she looked at me with this withering head to toe and back up and said, yes. And it was so weird for me because I knew exactly who she was, and she had no idea who I was. And that was the first time in my life that someone who knew me really well had looked at me with that, I don't know who you are. And I started liking that, and I thought, that is cool. And it's kind of mean to do to people, you know, to sneak up on them that way. But so I went down to the dance. I just told her, it's me. And she went, oh, okay. Then she got happy. I went down to the dance, and it was so interesting because people didn't know how to treat me. And I was trying to get people to dance, and I was trying to get girls or boys to dance, and I was trying to get some of the other teachers to dance. Nobody would dance with me, not only just because I wasn't because I was a gorilla. That wasn't the problem. The problem was they didn't know if I was male or female. And I was really kind of scrawny in those days and didn't have many protrusions to give it away. And I left my watch on. So after a while, one of the boys recognized my wristwatch, and that was a problem. But the teachers were afraid to dance with me because what if I was the geekiest, most irritating kid ever? And the kids were kind of afraid not to dance with me because what if maybe I was a teacher? So I could see them sort of doing the card counting thing, you know, who's here? Who's this tall and is unaccounted for? And I think the cool kids were afraid I was a geek, and the geek kids were afraid I was a bully, and it was fun to see, well, you know, fun in a kind of sadistic way, to see all of this stuff go over their faces, and I had never seen some of those people, because they'd always known me, look at a person like they didn't know them. But they didn't recognize me. I didn't connect to anything in their brains, and that causes fear, and if something is absolutely unconnectable, we kind of go, I'm not dancing. And so that's something to consider, too. Sometimes if your kids are just saying no, 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 it may just be that they can't connect it with anything and you haven't done that. So a good way to introduce something to somebody else is to introduce it in terms of something you think they can connect it to. And don't force it. Don't go, no, no, this is like an Etch-a-Sketch. No, let me explain to you how. Because if you say this is like an Etch-a-Sketch and they go, not in my model, let that go, because that's what school tries to do. They try to say, this is part of the Civil War. This is a very important part of the Civil War. And you're going, yeah, but it reminds me of costume history books. And I'm going to file it there. There was a computer game one time to identify photos. It was kind of like a Jeopardy thing, but it was based on art, famous art. So they're showing some photo of a painting. It wasn't famous to me. I didn't know what it was. And they were saying, how would you date this? What year is this from, given the clues? And then you go through this little process, and they tell you if you had it right or wrong. And I was wrong because I didn't know anything about the boat, but I had pegged it within 20 years by the costumes. But that's not what they were after. So that was a kind of a schoolish thing. It's like, we will lead you through figuring out how old this is. Here's how you can tell, because of details of the ship. It's like, it was a sailboat, not a ship. I'm like, well, I didn't know that. But I know that collar and that tie. And so let them relax if they have another way to connect that to their universe, because their universe is the only one they can access anyway. That's how they think. So where does thinking and knowing turn to learning? And it's right there at that edge where you add on. So you're adding to the edges of what you know. And teachers know that theoretically. It's a thing that they know when they plan lessons, is that you can only add to what you already know. And that's one reason they do review. So they say, okay, remember this, remember this, remember this, and they add one more. And by then the kids are kind of ignoring them. They're going, yeah, I know, don't care, or I already knew. And that's the thing with 30 kids in school. I always have the 30 kids model because I do simple math. Got 30 kids in the class, if it's 26 or 20, whatever. 10 of them didn't know and might care. 10 of them already know, and 10 of them don't care. So you're aiming at the middle 10. You already lost 20. And of those 10, did you say something that made sense to them? Maybe, maybe not. Are they in the mood, or are they thinking about a note they got from a girlfriend or boyfriend? And you don't have that problem at home. Because if Holly's in the throes of her 90-mile-an-hour recitation of the problems of the day, that's not the moment to say, I heard some new music you might want to hear. So at home, you can wait till that moment when they've kind of taken a breath or they're looking around bored. People have been talking about boredom, and once you get into a good rhythm with your kids, they don't need to be bored more than a few minutes before they're at a lull. And if they're not already headed to turn the computer on or the games or, you know, saying somebody's picking me up in 20 minutes, that's an opportunity for you to bring something up if you want to. And I think that's a hard part of getting out of a schedule and realizing that people can learn anytime, day, night, weekends, vacations, is not thinking, okay, well, we worked real hard till 5, so I'm not going to do anything. I'm not going to do anything till tomorrow. But sometimes the thing that you want to connect the moment comes when they've brought something up and you're going, oh yeah, that reminds me of something. And so what reminds you can bounce back on them. What if is a really good learning tool. And when kids if they talk while they think, some kids are sort of mutterers and they go, oh, I don't know, I'm just thinking this. Some kids think quietly and they wait until they've planned what they're going to say to you and you don't get the whole process. But it's kind of neat to be with kids who talk through what they're thinking because you can pay attention to the questions they're asking and just kind of tweak the questions. And that's a way to help with their learning. And it helps with your learning too because you know what they know, and that's a really important thing to know. One of the big questions that especially, I don't know, young males like to play with is what if Hitler won? You know, what if World War II had been different? And there's a whole genre of literature out there of, you know, maps. People draw maps of what might have been different if this and that had happened. And boys seem to really love that stuff. And my boys would kind of need to talk to somebody else about it, but you can play with those kind of questions. There's a Blackadder, a thing called Blackadder Back and Forth, about Blackadder going back in history, messing things up. Shakespeare didn't write plays, he invented the ballpoint pen. Bonaparte won, you know. And those are just fun ideas. So don't say, no, that's stupid, it didn't happen, so let's not think about it. It's kind of fun to go there. What if Elizabeth I had gotten married? That's another thing that people think about all the time. How could she be queen for like 50 years and never get married? And how did that change all of the history of Spain and the New World? And what if Lincoln hadn't been assassinated? There's a card game called Chrononauts, little cards that you lay out in a pattern, and then there are cards you can play where you flip over some cards. It's a timeline that you change. And it has things like, what if John Lennon hadn't been assassinated? Then somebody becomes a senator and marijuana is legalized. But then, what if the Hindenburg didn't crash? That changes some stuff. Flip, flip, flip. You know, if this, then change these three cards. So you change those three cards, and that changes the course of history. And it's just a game, right? It's just a game. No, it's not just a game. It's a way for them to see that any of those factors honestly, truly would have changed something. You know, maybe at least there'd be more albums by John Lennon. Not that they're not still putting them out. And, you know, so what if Kennedy hadn't died? The social answer to that is he would have been discredited for being a wild living guy, but he died before he was discredited, so he's a saint. And that's a cool thing to think of in our own lives. What if I die while my kids still really like me? I'll be their saintly mom. What if I live really long and become their cranky old, you know, going crazy mom? Fewer points for me. And I saw Kirby trying to explain that game to his grandmother, and I thought that'd be cool because she was alive for a lot of those things that are just history for us. Keith and I were born in the 50s. And so, you know, some of that stuff we missed, the kids totally missed, and it was hard for her to get. It's a complicated game, and yet it isn't. You know, and Kirby, for years, worked at a gaming shop, and that's what he did, is explain how to play games. And it was fun to see something that was so simple. And it wasn't that it was hard to explain, it was just hard to understand. He was doing a good job. When I was teaching, kids used to ask the question that kids ask, why do we need to learn this? And I like that question. I used to ask it when I was a kid, and I used to get some bad answers. And I remember when I was taking Algebra 2 for a short while, before I switched to a poetry or speech class or something, I said, why do we need to know how to do square roots? And if he'd only known how soon it was that computers were coming along, he could have said, you don't. Hooray, woohoo. But he was not a forethoughtful guy. And he said, so you can measure how far away the stars are. And I was not only 15, I just went in the mood for him that day. And I said, don't we have people to do that? So I didn't want to be one of them. And turns out he didn't want me to be one of them in his class. But I used to tell the kids, so you'll get jokes. Because it was a flippant, short, and absolutely true answer. Because the more you know about anything, the more the world is funny and easily accessible, and the more jokes you get. And those are the moments that I live for when my kids get some Shakespeare joke. It's like, woohoo! I do the little inside happy dance. Maybe it's not so inside. Because those are the moments that you can take to the social bank. It's like, okay, you think my kid will never know anything, but how come he gets Othello jokes and your kid doesn't know, you know? And Holly was rewriting that Romeo and Juliet song, you know, our love's gonna be written down in history. just like Romeo and Juliet if they had lived, you know. And she's like, you know, how do we qualify this? Because we're joking about how the guy didn't really know the story. Obviously, he didn't really want to go down in history like Romeo and Juliet. And so I want to talk about associations, those kind of connections. What sense? Because that's another thing we couldn't put on our chart. Besides all the hypotheticals, what does it smell like? What does it feel like? You know, are you allergic to it? Does it make you itch? So what sense or stories or emotions? You know, which of those things do you just not want to talk about because it reminds you of something that makes you mad or makes you cry? What visions, what pictures do you have in your head? We could never put that on a public model. What things do you associate with your mother? You know, what did she smell like? What did she carry around in her purse? How did she drive the car? My mom tended not to ever shift past third, no matter how many gears a car had. And that's not important to know about my mom, but I always remember, because when she first got a four-speed car, she disregarded that entirely. What about your first pet? People have memories of first pets and other houses they've lived in. And a lot of times, little kid memories, you have the view of the cabinets being up here, so you know all the little hidey places that are down here. And you go back to the houses and they're all little. Those kind of pictures and memories are part of you. And you have memories of new stuff. You know, what's your newest car? What's so cool about it that your car's never had before? That, and what does it smell like? And what color is it? And, you know, that's part of you. I used to have nothing in my head for Delaware. And when Keith and I didn't have kids and we didn't have much money to spend, we used to play games with maps and stuff, and sometimes we'd just name the states. So we'd just have a piece of paper, and while we're doing other stuff, we'd try to write down all the states. And a couple of times, we had 49. It's like, what's missing? Delaware. So now, for one thing, I put Delaware first. Like, all right, Delaware. But I didn't know anybody from Delaware. I have no pictures of Delaware, no scent, no nothing. It's just like sometimes a little mark on a map. And there was a Garfield cartoon about that one time about Wyoming. And he said, Wyoming doesn't exist. Nobody's from Wyoming. Nobody's ever been to Wyoming. So the, you know, whoever did Garfield, that he felt of Wyoming as I do Delaware. But then I met one person who lived there, and I didn't like her much. And that was bad for Delaware. Because in my head now I have Delaware. Ooh. Very short list. You know, the chart is Delaware. Ooh. And that's not fair that she put, all by herself, put Delaware in the negative numbers. But luckily for everybody, her and Delaware, that's just my model of the universe, which is very flawed, very personal. New Mexico's big. Have you ever seen the maps where they show one place really big and then everything kind of dwindling off in the background? There's a map of Texas like that that I really love. There's a map of the United States. I have it on my webpage, but I have it buried because it's so rude. But it shows the United States really big, and then it has labels on other parts of the world related to what we do with that, you know, our oil fields, you know, stuff like that. Very tacky political picture, but that's it's okay that your map of yourself is like that, that you're really big and some of the people are just little stick figures or dots, because that's how it really is. Some people don't have speaking parts in the soap opera of your life. But one thing I know about Delaware, too, now from homeschooling, actually I have two little blips, that people who live in Delaware are expected to put their kids in preschool, that as soon as you get pregnant, you need to fill out the forms to apply to get your kid into the academic preschool. That's what they say, that it's not okay socially if you live there and neighboring places not to have your kid on a waiting list, because that's what they talk about in maternity is like, where's he going to go to school? You know, if he's assuming he's born alive, and, you know, it's like, wait, I don't even have a kid and I'm signed up. And that's very foreign where I am. So sometimes the homeschooling discussions go bad because I'm going, well, what do you care if you're going to homeschool or not? You know, your kid is three. And she's going, but the other kids are already have college savings and they're already in the college preschool. Oh, Delaware. Maybe Delaware's a great place. Anybody ever lived in Delaware so I can think better? Oh my gosh, see? Oh well. Nobody. I was right. Everything you can think of, every concept, every song, every motion that you make, every way that you see somebody walks a certain way with a posture, and you will either think, oh, that's like so-and-so, or I've never seen anybody walk that way. Some actor runs funny, and we were watching a movie the other day, and they're going, look, he runs funny. It's like, I don't think that much about people's runs, but I have a friend who can recognize people by the way they move, and she would have recognized me in that gorilla costume, even if she had just known me a little while, because for some reason she categorizes people by the way they walk, by the way they move. I hardly even notice. Holly notices ears and noses. She'd probably make a good plastic surgeon, or at least the plastic surgeon sketch artist people. You know, what do you want this nose or that nose? And I'm going, those are the same nose. And she'd be saying, oh, no. So you have, you know, a mass of connections in your brain. Some, and no one could count them. They're just uncountable. And I've told this story before, and it's in one of the essays in the book, but I had a professor in college who said this thing that was so stupid. You know, sometimes these guys at college say something really stupid. And what he said was, the universe is infinite, and what you have in your mind is larger than the universe. I said, oh, yeah, right. That's dumb. And lately, I really understand what he says, because the universe is just sitting there doing what it does. It doesn't have its whole what if Hitler won scenario, like we all do, or, you know, what if. And so the universe is just one universe. But inside us, we have alternate universes, fantasy universes. Some people are really religious, and so they have their whole religious universe. And if they change religions or decide maybe they're thinking about not having a religion, their whole universe changes. I mean, substantially. A friend of mine, when he was going to have his first baby, said, give me advice. And I said, buy insurance. You know, but I said, here's what happens when you become a dad. Every molecule of your body changes and becomes dad molecule. And Keith told me when we first had Kirby, I said, what did you feel like? What changed? And he said, I felt like the house and the car belonged to Kirby. You know, and this is, it's just like your focus of the universe changes somehow, and that changes memories. What I was talking about yesterday about with Ren, about reviewing your past. So I have my past as I understood it, and then I have it as I'm repainting it, as I'm re-categorizing those things and reanalyzing those things. I have a journal that I kept in a class in college. I went to college young. I was 17 to 20. And my mom had this little baby, and I was writing for some human development class, you know, to keep a journal about your ideas. And I should find that, because it's really embarrassing, and you can't blackmail me with it, because I have it already, I know. But I had justified how she spanked this infant baby in a crib, that it was better to do it now than later when he'd remember. That's what I thought about that in those days. And so I have that was me, and I remember that, and I need to be ashamed of that, you know, but that's the best idea I had about it at the time. And now I roll back and go, oh, if I had thought this way, all of this stuff would have changed after. So what you learn and what you know can be added to or amended to. It always is. So that's amending. So I didn't destroy the past, I just amended it. I do have one friend who does that, though, and he's a lunatic. And finally, after several instances where he would come back around and go, well, I understood this, blah, 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 he would act on his crazy new understanding. And I said, Ed, how do you think? How does this happen? That we already reminded you that this is how it went, and you were there, and you said, oh, yes, you're right, I forgot. He said, I only remember the last version of something. If someone changes my mind, I don't keep the old version. I just keep the new one. I don't have the capability of doing this, but Ed apparently had figured out some way to only have one version of every story, and his revisions didn't stick. But on the way home from this conference, you'll be thinking about it. Some things you missed, your kids might tell you stories about things when you weren't there, or two people saw the same thing from two different angles, and I love those reviews. When you go, oh yeah, that's why he said this on Saturday, because that thing had happened Friday, and that's a fun thing. So, but again, everybody's getting their own set of connections. Some people, because you can't really delete memories very well if you're not Ed Windsor, some things are best not learned. And that is probably why some people don't want their kids to watch scary movies, or and I don't want my kids to watch scary movies because I don't want them to wake me up. But I don't want to watch scary movies either, and Keith took several months, I guess, or weeks to watch all of, which was Alien. He was staying where they had cable, and he couldn't watch it beginning to end, but he could watch 15 minutes of it and turn it off. And eventually he jigsaw puzzled it all together, but it didn't have the full, you know, nightmare effect. And so I don't mind them having those visions, because I'm going to be there to talk about them. And this came up just lately in a discussion about how if you tell your kid you can't watch scary movies, he's still going to, only he won't tell you. he will keep that secret. And that's worse. He won't be able to process the story. He'll have to be sneaky. He'll have to go in his room and just have the nightmares quietly rather than have the bad dreams and the punishment. It's kind of a whole other area. But I don't worry about movies so much as I worry about my kids internalizing and saving forever after I'm dead what I do to them or say to them. And that's harsh. And so I don't want them to have too many mean, ghostly messages from me, because healthy people can't erase those. So that's good to be careful what you say and how you say it and to drive carefully and all that, because some things can't be undone. Some people, for mental health reasons, do like to encapsulate some parts of their lives. And one of my favorite theorists is Howard Gardner, who has written about theories of intelligence, multiple intelligences, because when we were kids, all that was tested was math and language. And if they lied and said they were testing science and history, no, that was more math. That was more language, more reading. Read this and answer the question. It just happened that some of it was about plants and some of it was about maps, but it was still just reading. And, excuse me. But some people aren't really good at going through and analyzing their histories. Something's very painful, or that's just not how they think, or that's not what they're interested in. Some people are really good at that. Howard Gardner calls that interpersonal intelligence, if you're interested in, like Holly, everybody else's life. And if you're really good at looking at your own and thinking about what that bodily knowledge about how heavy Dr. Peppers are, some people are really good at knowing when they feel angry or tired or jealous. Really good. Like they feel that biochemical rush and they know what it is. They go, no, I'm just restless. I just need to go for a walk. Or, no, I'm just this. And I know what to do for this. I know the first aid for this biochemical thing. And that's intrapersonal intelligence. If you have, for any reason, the habit of encapsulating part of your insides, like I'm not going to think about my childhood, or I'm not going to think about my stepdad because I hated his guts, and what happens that's bad about that, one reason that it might be good to gradually untangle that, like a big box of jewelry where the chains are all tied together, you know, your rings are tangled up. You don't have to untangle it all at once, but maybe once in a while go in there and pull a thing out, is because you will shut down that part of your memories. If you, my eighth grade is almost gone because my mom left and went to stay with her mom. She was gone, I don't even know how long, and most of my life I could go, no, it was about from Easter till about 3 weeks later on a Tuesday. And I have blocks of memory. I know how long somebody was my boyfriend or how long when I got my bike, stuff. I have these markers. But for a while in eighth grade when my mom left, it just sort of mushes up. It goes blank. I remember some emotions. I remember being mad at my dad because he wanted me to get up and make his breakfast before he went to work. It's like, what? You gotta be kidding me. And I did it, but I hated it. And it's like, I couldn't tell you how long my mom was gone. I think it was like 6 or 8 weeks, and she burned the Volkswagen out by about mule shoe because she didn't shift a fourth. But then she came back, and then things came back to color. You know, when she came back, it's like, oh, okay, all right, now I don't have to get up at 6 and make my dad's breakfast, and the Volkswagen's fixed, and we're okay now. If you have parts of your brain that you can't access, it's just limiting your model of the universe, and you're losing some connections in it. And physically, I think there may be a whole little section of your brain that's kind of roped off. And so the clearer you can get about childhood memories and stuff, the better you can think about now. And that's kind of weird, but I think it's true. And some people do have encapsulated things. And one poor girl remembered a whole murder. You know, she got grown and she said, oh, yeah, I think that really did happen when my dad took my little friend to the woods. That would be horrible. You know, if I ever hit anybody with a car, I'm sure that I'll just quit being able to think because I won't be able to think about that. But as well as you can, try to untangle the inside so you can get to all the parts of it, because you get more jokes like that. Happiness helps learning. If you're calm and happy and hopeful and thinking light, bubbly thoughts, it's easier to learn and remember things. So try to induce that. That needs to be part of your learning nest, is less stress, less fear. Fear is no good. Teachers know it. You can't learn when you're afraid. But that's true at home, too. Biochemically, joy is way better than dismay, not just for learning, but for being healthy, for sleeping well, for digesting well. Optimism is better than negativity, and you need to do that. Don't just tell you, I said be optimistic. I knew you weren't ever going to be optimistic. That's not how it works. You be optimistic, and it's kind of contagious. A lot of moods really, truly are contagious. And if you go around being really negative, and if you want, what's the the character on Hitchhiker's Guide to the Universe, the robot? Marvin. Marvin, the depressed robot. If you're like that, your kids are not going to learn very much because they're going to be trying to stay out of your way and trying not to induce the, I knew you wouldn't like it, kind of the Eeyore character. So try not to be Eeyore or Marvin or say, I don't know. I'm not feeling good this week, but next week will be fun. Negativity can also create one of those do not enter areas of your brain, so try not to do it. And if one of the areas of their brain is, don't go there because mom will start sounding like Eeyore, then you need to do something to fix that. So they're still willing to come and talk to you and come and tell you their stories and come and say, okay, I saw this really scary movie and I need to tell you all about it. When something is declared stupid, a lot of things happen. And two particularly bad things. The kid will be embarrassed or ashamed if they don't agree with you. So if you say, that music is stupid, that show is stupid, your friend is stupid, I'm not saying I'm not guilty because all of those three things, I could fill in the blanks with who and what it was I said was stupid. And maybe I didn't use the word stupid, but, you know, my kids aren't stupid. If you declare something stupid or worthless or unworthy, your kid will either agree with you mindlessly, which is not what you want, or your kid will say, no, it's not, which means mom is stupid. So don't set yourself up in opposition to the Power Rangers because you lose like a dog. You need to join the Power Rangers and go with that. Because if you tell your kid, here's what's good in the world, and here's what's bad in the world, you've just banded with bad. Because you've just become one of the things that's keeping them from getting access to all of the parts of the universe. And so that's just it's a form of negativity and pessimism. If you declare, like, I don't like opera much, and it's not that I haven't seen any, I have. I like the makeups, I like the costumes, but I don't want to hear them singing in Italian. And so I haven't brought opera home and said, listen to this, this is really great. So I'm kind of hoping my kids will meet people who do like opera so that they'll have that, because I just can't bring myself to do it. I just, you know. But there are other things that I can, that I have exposed them to, but at least I haven't told them opera's stupid, don't ever go there. It's just a lot of people really like opera. My next door neighbor, when I broke my leg, kept bringing me over stuff and said, you want to listen to this? Just because I can't get away? Now that's cold, man. Your kids might be sneaky if you start saying too many things are stupid, because they might still want to listen to rap and watch Eliminate, but they'll have to hide it from you. And I'm not saying you need to go and buy them rap and record all the Eliminate shows that they miss. No, no, no. But, you know, just keep your opinion more or less to yourself. I do shame Holly set up her Barbie-mobile the other day. She got her Barbies out. She put Ken and three Barbies in the skankiest Barbie clothes she had. Took it into Kirby's room and said, what TV show is this? Eliminate. And she was sorting laundry to decide what to bring here, and I was saying, I don't know about that one. She goes, well, that's what I'll wear when I'm on Eliminate. When you say that's stupid, you short-circuit some of your brain trails and you short-circuit relationships too. My mom thought the Friendly Giant was stupid, and she told me so, and I knew he was smarter and nicer than she was. Woo-hoo! Yee-haw! All right, fine. A couple of years ago, we played that Connect the Dots game that Kelly talked about, and Holly helped me print that. It was screen printed. Two dots on each page. It said connect the dots in color, and there were two dots. And people connected them some of the coolest ways. All kinds of 3D folding and drawing and sticking things through it, and that was a lot of fun. You can do that on your own if you weren't here and you missed that. Just get some piece of paper and put two dots on it anywhere. Everybody can put their own two dots and trade them around. And we had them all taped to the wall, and I want to do that again sometime. But when the line between thinking and learning and playing is gone, when this is not taking a lot of conscious thought for you, but your life has just become playful, and you've gotten good at connecting things, and you don't mind that they've connected some rock and roll song to The Simpsons to Shakespeare, that's good with you, then it's going to get easy. It'll be easy when you don't have to think about it. And that's what natural learning is, when you don't have to think about it. I had two more pages, and they're making me quit. Thank you very much.